You're listening to My Millennial Answers. Welcome to the show, Australia and the world. We've got listeners everywhere, John.
We have, Glenn.
USA. I'll tell you what's building up. Bloody New Zealand.
Is it?
Yeah.
Imagine over the ditch.
Imagine if we did a live episode in the ditch.
South Island.
In the ditch. Over the ditch. Yeah. Today we've got Sean Wellman from Wellman Finance. G'day, Sean. How are you?
Welcome, Sean. Good, Glenn.
Thanks, John. Good to see you going global.
Yes.
Johnny Boy's hitting the big stage, isn't he?
Yeah.
Only a matter of time.
Wellington or Queenstown? Queenstown, probably.
I don't know. Queenstown's I booked a ticket to Auckland the other day.
Doesn't surprise me.
Anyway.
Good spot.
Back to the show, but what up, New Zealand? Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
And today on My Millennial Answers, I wanted to just focus on almost the 101 back to basics on mortgages, mortgage broking, how that world works. I put a question up on Instagram. I've got a heap of responses, so I'm just going to cherry pick them. I haven't given you guys any notice. Sorry, not sorry. But before we do...
It's unusual.
Yeah,
because usually right. gives heaps.
Usually I'm prepared for you, John.
Yes.
Now, Sean, you may have heard us talk about Sean Wellman. Sean, you support My Millennial Money Property.
Yep.
So thank you so much for getting behind our other podcast.
Been great to be involved.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed the involvement. And
you're starting to meet a lot of our listeners and...
Yeah, they've been great, actually. I mean, anyone that generally listens to a podcast and on the train or on the way to work or whatever, generally want to get educated, learn, rather than listen to Spotify and that. So we find...
Unless
they're
listening to the podcast on Spotify, shout
out
Spotify.
Yeah, we are on Spotify, aren't we?
Oh, through Spotify. You know what I mean, though.
Yeah, music,
you know, whatever. You know what I mean. They're not going through their playlist.
Yeah.
They're listening to a podcast. And I've been really impressed with the people that have sort of...
Well, I guess
come to you're
Wellman not Finance. Listening to this because you've jumped in the car and it's come up on the radio and we're between ad breaks or whatever. Mm. Like, you've actually gone intentional. I want to be encouraged. I want to be motivated.
Yeah.
And I want to learn.
I want to know more about this topic.
So...
Yeah. And when you're in Melbourne, this great city that we're in currently, Glenn, you get 2 hours each way to listen to podcasts on your way to work, don't you, because of the traffic issues.
Oh, you're not wrong.
If you haven't listened to My Millennial Money Property, punch it into Spotify, punch it into Apple Podcasts, punch it into Castbox, punch it anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a cool little podcast that we do. Here's a question here from Candace on Instagram. And remember, you may know the answers to this stuff, but we've got a variety of different listeners. So there's everyone's on their own journey. If you know the answers off the top of your head, use this opportunity during this episode to just focus on your own personal finances, focus on your own situation and what you can improve. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm not going to learn anything, use it as a half hour carve out to learn.
Yep. And how would I answer that question?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. Do you really need a down payment? What if we have no money to put down? So a person calls you and they say, I want to buy a house. And I will say, like, you hear a lot of stuff out there. There's ads that are like rent to buy and all that stuff, right? So there could be genuine thoughts and concepts out there that I can get a house without a down payment. So it's not this, you've got no money, you're broke type thing. Mm. They could have $50,000 in an investment account, for example. So if someone says, Sean, do I need a down payment to get into this property? What would you generally say?
Yeah, I'd say yes. Definitely yes. So
okay,
when you say down deposit.
can we just clarify a down payment?
Down payment is a deposit, so your savings, what you're going to contribute to the property. So we would say yes, however, some people can enter with a minimum deposit if they use a family guarantee.
Right.
Where they're using the security of their parents' property, which effectively helps secure their loan, and the bank effectively use that as a equity or as a deposit. So there are – but – you would generally have to pay the purchase costs associated with that property, whether it's stamp duty and stamp duty as well. So
question, in the most basic terms, the bank want to know, if you stop paying, we can sell the asset and get our money back.
Correct.
And the reason why they don't generally lend 100% or allow you to not have any security, if you didn't pay the mortgage and there was a downtime in the market, generally speaking, there isn't going to be a variance of 20%.
That's right.
In a purchase price, yep. Like broad brushstrokes.
Mm. So you've explained it perfectly. But with a family guarantee, then they can call upon the property that you've just purchased, which if it doesn't cover the shortfall, then they've got a little backup of some of your parents' property that they've put up as security.
Yes. Yep.
So correct. when you say some of the parents' property, they're just taking more of the equity than what they normally would have from your parents' property.
It's called a limited guarantee. So they'll just take enough to keep the total loan amount under 80%.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you bought a property for $500,000 and you were borrowing the $500,000, there's no bank in the world that would do that because it's 100% loan.
Yep.
But then if you secure that by the $500,000 property and then you just take a limited guarantee, so you'd use $125,000, it might be getting a bit complicated, so now that $500,000 loan is secured by $500,000 property plus $125,000 of your parents, $625,000, yep. Which now it's an 80% loan. The bank's got more comfort.
Yep.
And you can go and get a loan.
So yep. I want to repeat that just so I'm clear in understanding it. You could literally buy a $500,000 home if you've got good income to service with no down deposit yourself. You would have that $500,000 mortgage still, and if you wanted to use $125,000 or whatever it is of your parents' home, the bank will still lend you the $500K, but they've got their claws on 20% of the property value.
On
your parents' house.
Correct.
Yep.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Okay.
So it might initially sound like a straightforward question, but there's so many ways you can weave that too.
Well, I guess the other question that Candace could have asked is, can I buy a property with no security other than the property itself?
Yes, and that's no, without you need a deposit.
Yes.
Yeah, you need some savings. The two things the bank look at is your income, can you service a loan, and equity position, your deposit or down payment that Candace is talking about.
Which the guarantor from the parents comes in that bracket of cash or equity.
There's a lot of first home buyers here. Tegan asks, what financial state should I be in before we meet? Like, should I have a deposit saved? So an example, I said, what would you ask a mortgage broker is the question on Instagram. And if she was asking you before she meets you, how would you want her financial situation to be before you get that call from her?
Doesn't really matter, because a lot of times people are coming to see us to say what is their position now. And the initial meeting is just as much about me finding out what the client's goals are, what you want to do. Do you want to buy a house? Do you want to buy an investment? Okay, let's have a look at your position now. And if you're not in a position to do that, and it's something that you're striving for, then let's put you in a position that 6-12 months later you can come back, and then we can apply for a pre-approval because we had that meeting 12 months prior.
Yeah. So you're saving, go away and save more money and then come back when you've got X? Or do you reverse engineer it and say, well, I want to buy in at 400 grand. This is how much I need, but if you're bought in at 300 grand, I could actually go and buy today.
Exactly. So we'll give you the scenarios. Okay, what are you looking to purchase?
Yeah.
What's your budget? Okay, well, this is what you can do now, but if you want to purchase at a higher price, well, this is what you need to be able to put in place. You may need to save a greater deposit. You may need to, get that pay rise, that 5% pay rise that your boss promised you 3 years ago.
Yep.
These are the things that they'll get some clarity around with a meeting.
And I think it's important because Charlie basically, she asked the same question, at what stage when planning should I speak to a broker? I would say as well, because everyone's situation is so unique, you don't want to apply some, cafe or backyard banter that you've had with loose friends and a friend of a friend made a comment. You don't want to just apply that to you because it could put you on the sidelines when you don't need to be. And the reason I say this is there's a question here from Jessica Small. Although I work full time, are you hesitant to find a home loan for her because she's still at uni? Now, if she in her own mind had, I'm still at uni, so I can't buy a home, where you could be like, well, the banks pretty much just want to know that you've got income that's ongoing and a deposit. So can you speak to that situation about particularly being at uni and working still?
Doesn't affect it. It's because the bank's looking at what your full-time employment is, what your regular income is. So if it was, if the university was affecting and you're working part-time and your income was down because of that, then yes. But if you've got a full-time income and you're doing on top of that,
yeah,
you know, pretty busy obviously, and you're starting to try and educate yourself, well, that doesn't affect your, you know, your chances of getting pre-approved or getting into the market.
Yeah, and I would just add there that I find most people go to mortgage brokers too late. They're too late in the process. They think to themselves, because they've maybe heard it out at the local barbecue, oh, I'll go and see a mortgage broker when I've saved my deposits and I think I'm ready. Well, you're not a mortgage broker. How about you go and chat to one 6 months prior who can give you the options, like you mentioned before,
Sean? Line the ducks up.
Well, that's the, and it's a really good point, because the clients that come and see us, they'll either, some will think they're not ready.
Yeah.
And they're well and truly ready.
Yes.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got ones that think they can go in and purchase tomorrow, but they're not even close.
Yeah.
So it's just getting a real clarity around what's your real position, and not just assuming that yes, you can go and purchase, or no, you can't.
Yeah,
actually have a look at your real position.
Yeah. Yep.
So just on that, I was going to tell you this offline, Sean, but I'll tell you now. I got a testimony from a listener, and he said, I'll tell you his name after this. 12 months ago, I was sitting at home after a recent job redundancy. I had a newborn son, wife, who was on maternity leave. We'd been saving for a house, but with no income from either of us, they were living off his redundancy payment and their savings, right? It took me until April at the start of this year to find some solid work. And it was around that time I found your podcast. With a wife back at work, we regained some resemblance of the budget. But like most, the way we had lived and our dreams to save for the house weren't lining up. We had no real control. One night, out of frustration, he convinced his wife to buy the spending plan that I've got, and she rolled her eyes, you know, another crazy idea. So they got that happening in September. They joined the M3 Facebook community. A couple of weeks later, I referred him to Sean Wellman, in brackets, the legend himself, to chat about mortgage things. Sean spent hours on the phone to me answering all sorts of dumb first homeowner questions, no obligations, no pushy sales talk. I thought you were selling snake oil over there.
Is it signed Sean Wellman on the bottom?
Yeah, it's his brother.
No sales talk, like just education. We also dug deep on our spending plan and ended up saving more than they thought. So basically he said, with the help of your spending plan and Sean's expertise, we realized that we could put a deposit down on a brand new townhouse off the plan. Mm. We're now all set to go, spending plans on track, home loans ready, and chomping at the bit to moving to their new home, which will be ready in February. And that's Josh Nicholson from Brisbane.
Yeah, a really nice couple.
But I guess, do you want to talk to that situation? Because when I read this story, I'm thinking, you bloody don't have a job, you're freaking this and that. There's no way that you can get a mortgage, right? Face value.
Yeah.
But they've...
Fast forward 3 months and they're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to us about that.
Oh, it was a process, a bit of back and forth, but it was really around... probably what we're just talking about, someone, in this case, Josh and his wife, coming to see me and saying, look, we want to purchase in the next 12 or 18 months and, you know, we know we're probably not in a position. And we had a look at their position and I said, well, you're actually pretty close. And they were pretty keen to buy a property to live in. Just had a young child, wanted to, you know, establish their own space. They're in Brisbane. And so we spoke about some different scenarios and Josh came to me and said, look, we've found a townhouse that we really like in the area that we like. And one of the bonuses with that is based in Queensland, you also get a $15,000 first homeowners grant. So that effectively made up, they had enough deposit, but that actually reduced some of their costs in terms of mortgage insurance and that, because they were borrowing less. Because they had an additional $15,000 to put to a suitable property, And the added bonus for that is that it was actually only about 3 or 4 months from completion. So it wasn't like they had to wait 12 months and that as well. So they actually got to have a look at some townhouses that were nearly complete and actually have a look at the product, which I think is a real added bonus. And, yeah, we applied for a pre-approval. We've put everything in place and now we're just waiting for the certificate of occupancy. And then they can move in. So that's been a really good story. And, again, the Nicholsons were just unbelievable because they'd listened to the podcast. They had a lot of the background information, so they were asking some – there's no silly questions in this because it's a different language. You don't buy a house every day.
No.
Well
– John does.
John.
No, he doesn't. I help people.
Yeah. I was really pleasantly surprised about how much background knowledge they had.
Great.
And they were asking all the right questions. Mm. And, you know, that's a really good story about someone sort of thinking, no, they might, I think they're a little bit off, but they were a bit closer than what they thought.
Cool. Yeah, and I think that's a good story then. It speaks to, you know, there's so many of these questions here. What do I need to do before I call Sean? What do I need to do before I – well, we need to take some responsibility maybe, you know. You can get my spending plan for under $70.
Yeah.
You can sort your own finances out. So at least you know if you're living beyond your means to start with. And I'd probably say if you do a good spending plan or budget and you're spending $100 a week more than what you're actually earning, might be a problem there. Not sure, not a scientist, but going out on a limb.
Yeah.
So there are some things that we can do, but having the call with the mortgage broker can give you that encouragement to sort your money out to say, look, if you get to this point here, we can dance.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think you don't, and think not just not treating it as a transaction, like where you're just going, I've got the money, bang, I'm going to buy a house, I'm going to get a loan. It's actually a process.
Yeah.
And everyone's process is very different.
Yeah.
In terms of some people will be ready, they'll purchase in a month. Some people come and see and they'll purchase 2.5 years later.
Yeah.
But that's okay. But it's actually working through the scenarios, and it's a process to buying a house, and because it's a big step for people. People who have never had a loan before, never had a credit card, and suddenly they're borrowing a large sum of money.
Yeah.
So that's why we've really just focused really on the education, getting people's head around the numbers, making sure they understand it, and then when they're ready to buy, they'll purchase.
So. One other thing that I learned from that story, call me crazy, but I'm sitting in Melbourne right now in your boardroom.
About 6 degrees in here. Yeah. Geez, they've turned the air conditioning up.
I like working in a freezer. I like working in a freezer. You're in Melbourne. These guys, Josh and his lovely wife, are in Brisbane. Am I understanding that you can help people anywhere in Australia?
Correct.
Yeah, sweet.
Yep, absolutely. So what we do, a lot of people like a Skype call.
Yep.
Phone conversation. I do get interstate, so when I am in that state, I'll always call up and say g'day. But one thing you do when you do a pre-approval or you lodge an application is you have to have face-to-face identification. Sure. So, you know, we'll get our clients to we'll do identity checks, get them to go into a branch. BID. Yep. So there is some compliance
checks
around that.
Checks and balances.
But you don't need to physically eyeball them. They just need face-to-face with someone that can identify them on your behalf?
Well, every bank's got their own process.
Right.
So sometimes we will have to go and identify them face-to-face. Sometimes they can go to a post office and do – it's called Zip ID.
Yep.
Go into a branch and do it with 100 points of ID and do an identity check. So every bank's got a different –
sure.
A different process.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, there's an identification process, if you like, through different lenders where you don't necessarily have to be in the same state as that client.
Yep.
Alicia asks, how do I know I can trust you?
Ooh.
See, I would probably say to Alicia, how do you know you can trust anyone?
That's a good point.
It's got to be that gut check.
Yeah.
I mean,
ask questions.
If I walk into someone's office or the Skype call and there's gold lions in the background and everyone's in silk clothes and a suit, it feels greasy or whatever, like, I don't know. My gut's pretty much going, ooh, something that's right.
Like, it's like anything in life, isn't
exactly.
it? Like,
so
it's a, and people have to feel comfortable with that. We don't pretend to be everything for everyone. We're not. So what we always recommend is if you come and see us, have a chat to us, get to meet us, but don't feel obliged you have to go and use us.
No. Yeah.
We'll give you the information, but go and go to another mortgage broker, go to your bank, get a feel for what
Google
you would like.
Google their name.
Yeah.
That's a huge one.
Yeah. I always do that.
Yeah,
sort of do a bit of background check. I love to know what people's story is.
Ask your friends what mortgage broker they've used and if they're happy with them.
And most of our referrals will come from our existing clients.
Yeah.
So that's the way it works. So if you look after one person,
And I think it's not so much a trust thing. It's almost a personality thing. Can you relate to the people that you're dealing with, experts in your corner? So and if you can't, then find someone you can, I reckon. Because otherwise it makes the journey a bit harder.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to – I mean, people think going to see, you know, John or going to see you, Glenn, or going to see your mortgage broker, it's about it's just as much about us getting to know the client and what – because people have got different goals. We need to know a bit of background about what people in their lives.
But I think it's so much more than how do I know if I can trust a mortgage broker – I think it's not even that. It's like if I went to an accountant, a new accountant, to a new solicitor, to a new dentist, to a new osteopath, to a new physio, to a new chiropractor. Do you want to keep going?
No.
Okay. To a new whatever, right? They could be well-established, good brand, fantastic image, but if they're patronizing to me, not keen.
Yeah.
If I feel that they're being sexist or misogynist to my partner or whatever, probably not keen.
Yeah.
So I think it's just always have a healthy piece of skepticism in your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
And
I think that comes back.
Don't commit overnight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same. It's even with the people we deal with in terms of our conveyances. I mean, John and I was our relationship. I met John about 5 years ago through a mutual mate.
Sounds cute.
We hit it off right away. Well, you know?
but
Sean's actually John's broker, if anyone's wondering.
But if
is he your biggest pain in the ass client? probably is.
But you know, you meet different people and that, and you have to actually relate to those people, have similar values, and that tends to work. And the other thing is, to be honest with you, I mean, you want to be able to hang out with good people. As well, there's not enough hours in the day, so that becomes important as well.
So on that note, I might leave it here.
Thanks. We'll run to where you were going.
Yeah.
Brendan asks, this is an interesting one, and I probably should have given you notice on this question.
It's not on the running sheet.
There's no running sheet over there.
No, that's why.
Brendan asks, what's the most important question that someone should ask a mortgage broker?
That's a great question. That's a great question. But what question would you ask?
So is he saying for his own situation or is he trying
generally.
To choose a mortgage broker?
I don't know. This is the magic of podcasting.
Yeah,
cool. That can go anywhere.
That's it. Let's take it there.
I think a great question to ask is if I purchase this property, you know, when you work out the borrowing capacity and you work out the numbers, how is this going to impact my lifestyle? So, and there's a number of factors that come into that because most people, if they're buying a property, they still want to be able to do the things that they enjoy doing.
Yeah, just because I own a property doesn't mean I don't want to go on holidays anymore.
Exactly. I don't want to sit and eat bread and rice in the corner. And so it's about, okay, you might work through some scenarios. What are you paying rent at the moment? You're going to buy an owner-occupied property that's going to be replacing your rent with a mortgage. And working through that and working through your goals and your holidays and things like that and your cash flow position, which I know you do a lot of work with your clients, Glenn. So it's I think that's a really good question to say because people are worried about when we spoke about before about when you're borrowing a large sum of money for the first time, that's a big step. But the number one thing is how is that going to impact my lifestyle?
Yeah, and it flows to like – if I went to a mortgage broker and they're like, oh, hey, Glenn, you can borrow $1 million. So I'm running around looking for a $1 million house because that's the max I can borrow. But you're right. If I – just because I can doesn't mean I should. So it's a good question. What would you want to ask a mortgage broker, John?
Well, I took the question as though I'm assessing which mortgage broker to use based on the previous question, I suppose. So I would go along the lines of one of the first questions I would ask is how often does that mortgage broker deal with my age group and the type of properties that I'm maybe looking at, whether it's owner-occupier or investment, and do you invest in property yourself? Because I think that goes a long way to saying, well, this person in my corner is experienced and got their hands dirty themselves in the field that I'm actually walking into.
Yep, that's good. And even give us some examples where you've helped people in our situation buy a property.
Correct.
But actually, because people like hearing about real stories.
Yeah.
So, and there's so many case studies about, you know, when someone comes to see you in a certain position, you've helped them get to a certain position. Well, let's talk about, you know, how that happened.
Yeah.
So I think that's that's important. And maybe even to say, give us three references.
Yeah.
People we can call that have dealt with you.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, going back to that question before, your best references are your clients, people that you've helped in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And usually the three you give probably aren't going to be your worst clients.
Oh, that's probably true, actually. Yeah.
But it gives you a starting point at least, doesn't it? The fact that you can reel three off is a bonus.
I haven't got any clients yet, but when I do, I'll want to grab my first one?
I'll let you know.
I just think Googling people. Grace.
Who are you Googling at the moment?
You don't want to know. Does it cost more? Grace says, does it cost more in interest to have an offset account? So I guess I'm translating that in terms of a vanilla mortgage, which is we just take $2,000 out of your other account over there every month and it's off the shelf and bam. What are the trade-offs in fees with features and benefits, and is it worth paying more fees or packages for certain? So I don't know if it speaks to flexibility.
Yeah, the rates. The rates with a variable offset loan and a basic variable are very similar, but a offset account usually comes with an annual package fee. That's about probably an extra $395, $400 a month, and then you factor in how much
a
money
month or a year.
A month. Sorry, or a year. Did I say a year?
You said a month. I'm like,
oh, wow.
She's got to find a new broker, John.
That's expensive. No, sorry.
She's changed my savings plan quite considerably. Yeah.
So it does vary, but there's an annual package fee, I should say, not a monthly package fee. And then you just factor in, you know, what are you going to save with an offset versus what are you going to save not paying the annual fee?
And I mean, whatever way it's polished with the banks, whether it's a annual fee or a 0.1% more interest, generally you can't beat a bank. There's always trade-offs, isn't there? And I don't think, and that's why we need to lead with strategy.
Yeah.
I want to buy this property over here. I want to live in it for 3 years. Then I'm going to move out of that and then going to buy the home that we'll raise the family in. So that strategy might mean, well, we need an offset account versus I've just had 5 kids and I want to buy a nest to bring them up in or whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, it shouldn't cost that much a nest these days, should it?
But I mean, it all goes back to strategy.
Absolutely, and part of that strategy is finding a bank that is going to work for you long term as well. Depending on, you know, you might earn commission income, bonus income. Yeah. There's some banks that are much more favourable, so you're most likely going to probably end up at one of those banks down the track, even though the rate might be 0.1 or 0.2% nearer, more expensive at the start. But the benefit in that is it's going to allow you to do more things and might complement your long-term strategy a lot better than, you know, some of these.
And a good broker will ask that question, won't they? What is your long-term outcome? If you're looking at a second property, when's that going to be? All those sort of things. And you and I were talking off air about the different lenders at the moment and their timeframes of getting back and getting pre-approvals in place. Like they range at the moment from 4 hours to 4 weeks.
I wish I could mention some names of banks.
Yeah. So
I'd be blacklisted though.
Citibank is rubbish. I know that. Suncorp, terrible. Like,
is this what you're talking about, John?
Who told you that, John?
I Googled them both. Yeah. No. But
yeah. No, that's this time of year. It's the banks get swamped because everyone's trying to settle before Christmas.
Oh, so all servicing, all service goes out the window, maybe.
Yeah, well, they just swamped. So what happens is their service levels blow out. So generally, if you lodge a pre-approval with a bank, they might take a week. Yeah. At this time of year, they might take 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
So it's just being transparent.
I'm going to jump in there. You said the magic P word. Little James, I can't even read half these names on Instagram. Why is it an issue to keep renewing a pre-approval? One lender tried to tell me it is. So talk to us about, just set the scene with pre-approval first and then swing around to why is it a pain in the ass factor? Is it a lazy broker? Is it actually an issue? Does it put an inquiry in your credit? Talk to us about pre-approval process.
Well, pre-approval will last 3 months and most people realistically don't buy a property within 3 months. So, and then you can extend it out for another 3 months.
So do I need a pre-approval to start with if I want to buy my first home?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I would never.
Well, you don't physically, do you? Technically, you don't. You could find the house first and then go and get your finance, but it'd just be lagging, wouldn't it?
Well, you're making the assumption that you're definitely going to get finance because otherwise if your finance for some reason isn't approved after you purchase, you're in chance of defaulting and losing a deposit. So the other thing with doing a pre-approval is you can go and make an offer on a place unconditionally, which is a lot stronger than making an offer subject to finance.
And feeling confidently, not painting your freaking self into a corner.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I would always encourage our clients and we would always look at arranging a pre-approval. But back to you, your question, Glenn, about 6 months. And then if it does expire, then we would just lodge another one. So that's really, let's say that's two inquiries over 12 months. That's not going to be a blemish
on
your credit file. It's when you're doing 6 or 7, you know, so you're going through do 2 or 3 different banks and you're doing lots of inquiries. But if you're doing lodging a pre-approval once every 6 months.
And if it is with the same bank, they should know that, you know, it's not actually an issue.
Exactly right.
So, okay, so in terms of I've come to you at the start of the year, Sean, I've got a pre-approval for my $500,000 townhouse over here. Didn't happen. The pre-approval's expired and I come back to you. Much more paperwork involved or – because I just want to get at, like, is this person being told from a broker don't worry, it's too much? Is it because they're being lazy and – is a lot of work and they're not getting paid for that or no guarantee of income, or is it just an update of refresher of data for the bank?
No, I can understand. So what would in that scenario there, we'd say we've already done a pre-approval. Now, as a broker, I would say if we don't want to lodge another pre-approval, has your circumstance changed at all from your previous when we lodged before? No, it hasn't. What are you saving? So we just do some checks and balances. And we just do some serviceability checks and stuff and say, look, I'm confident for you to go and purchase and we could still lodge because we've already done credit checks, we've already done the checks and balances. But we will generally still do lodge another pre-approval, which would for another 6 months, because eventually when you do purchase a property, we're going to need updated pay slips and that out. So we might as well get them all at the start. Get that pre-approval.
And it'll stop any emotional angst of, oh, we've put an offer in and the pre-approval's been delayed because it's Christmas time and blah, 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 blah. But it's probably about just being active in your circumstance. And I would say if you've got a broker who's whinging and moaning to you, like I don't want to there's a lot of good brokers out there, but no. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
I agree.
I don't know.
And one thing that appealed to me when I chose Sean back in the day was his – can-do attitude, let's bust down some walls to get a loan. Not, this is all too hard for me, I'm going to walk away and find myself an easier client. Not to say that I was hard, but you know what I mean? You either can do or you can't. Like the clients that you mentioned before who bought the townhouse in Brisbane, like they could have easily sat back and looked at their finances and said, no, we're years away. But it's where there's a will, there's a way. If you've got the attitude to get it done, you can make a lot of things happen, can't you?
Absolutely. And it's going to be work you're going to have to do anyway. So why not just do it at the start? Get the pre-approval in place.
Yeah.
Because you've done all the groundwork then. And it just
takes the pressure off for everyone. And really, if you are the broker, I would imagine would you rather have a time critical pre-approval when they've signed a form on the weekend or have a little bit more breathing space in your office?
Oh, I mean,
I would rather get rid of the time critical drama.
If people come to us with a contract, new client subject to finance, and it's got like a 7-day clause on it.
Yeah.
You got to go and get all the information. You do it, you do the best you can, but it does put time pressure
and
on.
And this is it. If their situation is loose and dodgy and you've had to go to a second or third tier lender that's got a, that you know you can get them finance, you know it's not the best deal short term, but at least you can get them in the property and then we'll get their finance situation sorted in 3 years' time, we'll swing back around and refi them in a...
Yeah.
If that lender that we have to use for this unique situation is a pain in the ass to deal with, you get hung out to dry as the broker, but it's out of your control if that client doesn't see that it's not in your control.
And I think that's like, and not, again, pumping his tyres, but what Sean will do is pre-frame that and say, well, let's go and use ABC lender. Their interest rate's a bit higher, but it's either them or sit on your hands for 2 years. Understand there may be a few pain points. Are you prepared for that?
Mm. Absolutely. And some people will say, no, I'm happy to pay a higher rate for 12 or 18 month period. Some people will say, well, no, I want to, I don't want to use that product, and that they might, you know, wait 6 or 12 months. But a lot easier to do that and go through that process at the start before they put a contract to sale in front of you.
Sure.
WH Frost says, how are bonus schemes received by lenders when assessing serviceability? So when we talk about serviceability, people, that's how is the loan being serviced? How is it being repaid? To service a loan, it's repayment. Is that a fair statement?
That's right. Yep.
So for example, Sean, I'm on an 80K base. And I've been on an 80K base for the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I get a 20K bonus. It's been pretty consistent over the last 3 years.
Yep.
This year I got a 20 grand bonus. Last year I didn't. The year before was 15 grand. How do you build that story to the lender with the bonus? Because correct me if I'm wrong, with different lenders, is it about building the story to give to the person underwriting the loan to work within the bank guidelines?
That's right.
Like, so, is there art involved in this?
Yeah, so 100% of your income that's included is your base, you know, your base salary that you get every week. The other incomes, well, the incomes that come under other categories are things like bonus income, commission income, rental income on investment properties. That's not included generally at 100%. So if the banks shade that income, and they generally use 80% of that income, and they need a historical, some historical evidence. So on your existing payslip, but also they might look at your PAYG summary for the previous 12 months to know that it's something that's got a history, and it's just not a one-off bonus. So that's how they'll assess that income.
Now, I'll just make something up here. Is that an APRA regulated or enforced rule to each bank, or can there be different lenders that have different guidelines about adding back bonus or
different banks will have different guidelines. So
I guess
absolutely.
What I'm getting to, it's like, this is why you can't just go down to bank A on the corner because you walk past it every day. You go to a broker who knows what's going on.
But generally 80% is if you put a blanket over the policy, that would fit with most lenders. There's some lenders, so there's some, purely some professions that rely 100% on commission or 100%, not so much bonus. And there's some professions that overtime is a normal part of your industry. Like if you're
like
a nurse.
Yeah.
Correct. So there's banks that will look at that as 100% because that's a normal part of your regular income.
Yep. Sure. Do you like being a broker?
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yep.
That wasn't it. It was just me wondering.
Yeah. Like anything, most of the time.
Yeah. Well, but that was it. It's like when I deal with a professional, can I actually share a story?
It's your podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
As long as it's true.
Yeah. I'll share this story.
Hang on. Can we cut you off if it's no good?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll cut you off by pressing mute. So, you know the...
2 minutes.
Yeah. And then we'll get the hell out of here.
Clock's ticking.
Because this is what I'm going to drive it home.
Drive it home.
I'm going to drive this thing home.
Yeah, put a Lexus in it.
So When hang on, that's half the story.
So got your Volvo?
Yeah, I kept both of them. Yeah, are you on my case? All right. So my roller door. Do you know the electric roller door in your garage? Right.
Right invention.
Love it. Last year, it started beeping and flashing, which I'm like, oh, great, here we go. I Googled it, needs a service. I'm like, okay, well, it's still working, so I just kind of reset it
didn't
myself.
Didn't have a possum stuck in it or something?
Yeah, so I just went up, you know, held down the button, did what I did, reset it, got over my life. A couple of months ago, started beeping and thinking, oh, it's got obviously got a yearly thing in it that goes off to get it serviced. So I actually needed another remote opener, and there's a place that I go to, and I went in there and, you know, pulled up in the Lexus. So, you know, pulled up, and I don't know if they thought, oh, this guy, he's got, you know, heaps of money or something. Then I go in and go, oh, hey, mate, I just need a remote clicker for the garage door. He goes, oh, what type you got? And I said, oh, here you go. I showed him the photo. And he goes, oh, yeah, $55. That was all good. And then I said, oh, question, it's beeping at the moment? Like, what's the go? Is it just, I know it's like a service thing. Anyway, the other guy came out as well. And it was actually, I loved it because basically what happened, these guys were so passionate about the garage door opening thing, right? And I almost walked out with five new garage doors, you know what I mean? Like, but I said, oh, what's the go? Can I just oh, no, you got to get it serviced. You best probably to get us out there. We'll make sure it's all balanced and you don't want it to overcook and, you know, be out of balance and break. And I pretty much was like, oh, how much is a new one? They're like, oh, $800. And I'm thinking to myself, I'll just keep going. When it breaks, I'll get a new one. but what I'm getting at is
300.
Yeah. And so what I'm getting at is these guys in their industry, they were so passionate about garage doors. And I can tell you one thing. Guess where I'm going when the motor breaks? I'm going back to those guys.
Gumtree.
No.
Because they were so passionate.
Yeah.
And I walked out feeling guilty that I didn't get them to come and look at it.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, as a professional, there are probably, and there's hello to all the garage door installers out there listening, but you're probably thinking, oh, you're a dickhead, Glenn. There could have been something wrong with it.
Yeah.
But you hear what I'm saying? It's like, I don't want to go to a garage door guy. When I ask a question, it's a drama.
Yeah.
It's just his job.
Yeah.
Oh, this.
Should be passionate about it.
So, Sean, are you the garage door opener for mortgage brokers?
it took a while to get to the punchline.
I thought you were,
It's like, the hell's this got to do with what we're talking about?
I think, like most people that I've come across that are very good at their job, have a passion for their industry, and that, and I don't, and you can only pretend for so long, and it might not be, for example, in the mortgage broking industry, like there's a lot of numbers and there's parts of the process like any job, that's not that enjoyable, that's just the reality, but the interaction with different people, hearing their story, that's the part that I enjoy, with the job, and just helping people, and you do tend to forget sometimes that we deal with a number of clients from different backgrounds, different circumstances.
Yeah.
But for them, this is one of the biggest transactions of their life.
They're going to feel special, don't they?
So you have to remember that. I thought, that's a very good story, by the way. But I thought, do you do that with your clients? It's like, do we put like an ankle bracelet that goes beep, you've got to check your rate off every 12 months or something?
Put them on GPS and know where they are. Did you enjoy pre-season when you were an elite athlete?
When I was fit, I really enjoyed it, John. When I came back not in great condition, it was hell.
So for those who are into sport and stuff, so Sean Wellman, who did you play for, the Swans?
big footy fan. I played.
He knows all his garage door.
Is that a no?
I played predominantly at Essendon. I played two years at Adelaide, the Crows, and then I played 9 years at Essendon, a Melbourne based club.
Hawks, Essendon Hawks.
Bombers.
Come on, this is the show.
Hey, is there a Hawks?
Yes,
rival.
That's the enemy.
Yeah,
right. I don't know.
Hi to all the Hawk supporters out there.
Well, yeah. Hawkies, not your fault.
So if you do want any other, we're out of time, but I think that was just good to just have a chat for the first home buyer, talk about mortgages. I don't know if we did any groundbreaking podcasting here. There's no offense on you.
Geez, I'm flat now with your pitch.
But it's just a discussion, and I just want to encourage you, the best time to chat to a mortgage broker is when you've got time, just to see which way the wind's blowing.
Exactly
right. And so, Will, if you are in Melbourne and you want to actually book in and actually just have a coffee with Welly, wellmanfinance.com.au/M3, you can jump on there. His details are there. If you want a phone consult or a Skype, reach out still. If you don't want to, if you want to deal with someone face-to-face, do that as well. So it's all good.
Absolutely.
So, but thanks, Sean, for supporting My Millennial Money Property. And if you haven't heard that podcast, jump over and have a listen. It's a lot of fun. And we've got some cool stuff coming in 2020.
Thanks very much, Glenn. Thanks, John.
He's gone. He walked out of the room.
Where are you going, John?
All right. Bye.